Legacy matters. How you live your life, what you leave behind.
When my dad quit being a cop, it made a lot of noise.
They said I had a deep-seated disdain for authority bordering on insubordination.
Boy, did they get that wrong.
Right?
He works private cases now. Fewer compromises, he says.
I would like you as an expert witness.
I don't work for defense attorneys.
Even in pursuit of the truth.
Sometimes the system fails.
You got shot, came back.
But his code never has.
You have to decide what kind of a cop you want to be. It's either a mission or it's just a job.
And that's why I want to follow in his footsteps.
LAPD!
Not bad, Boot.
You know, your dad was a cop.
My dad and my mom.
That's like serious DNA.
How was your day?
Long. Murders, money laundering, racketeering. We have to nail this guy, Harry.
We do it my way this time.
This is Officer Bosch.
Back off, Bosch. I'm warning you.
Please.
Were you close to your father?
I never knew my father.
Sorry, I just worry about you.
Welcome to my world. I worry about you. Out on the mean streets of East Hollywood. Sometimes a person tries to set things right. They just run out of time.
I love you.
I love you too.
Ladies and gents, we're here for another revisitation of Michael Connelly's adapted Bosch universe, and here to join me from Everybody Counts is Mike Martini once again.
Hello everybody, how's it going tonight?
It's delightful, and we are tackling Mr. Harry Bosch and the follow-up on Amazon Prime's, you know, IMDb TV renamed Freevee TV, and was developed by Tom Bernardo and Eric Overmeyer, the latter who was a head writer on Homicide: Life on the Street, as well as the book creator Michael Connelly. Legacy follows Harry Bosch after he has finally quit the LAPD and moved into being a private eye. He once again teams with Honey Chandler, old legal counsel who he's worked with before. His daughter Maddie has now become a rookie officer, and he's got a whole other sets of shady figures that he encounters after taking on a mysterious billionaire and a cold case that has haunted the man. Will Bosch find happiness? Will he not avoid getting killed? Find out this season.
Yeah, really.
I was trying my best to sum it up. I didn't want to overpower everyone just a minute.
No, it's all good.
Oh man, so
keep some people in suspense.
Right. I took it you were stoked for this.
Oh, absolutely. For Legacy in general, but also with the with the save campaign that we had going for months, when we found out that season 7 was going to be the final season of Bosch, and a few of us banded together to get signatures and stuff like that, and you know, we were talking about how there's so much more content that hasn't been covered yet. So
I was trying to convince so many people to try and take it on. I'm like, hey, you like Breaking Bad, you like Ray Donovan, you like the one Chicago shows, you like this new Perry Mason. I think you're going to like this, you know, it's wild what people won't watch this. But I think it helped that there was a lot of actors that everyone else was familiar with. It seemed like Titus was pretty well known for other blockbusters like The Town and just other recurring roles, and so he'll always have that fan base. I honestly to God just think Mimi Rogers deserves an Emmy or Golden Globe for this season, but
Oh, absolutely. The scenes alone in the when she's meeting with her therapist was enough to bring tears to my eyes.
Yeah, so as a backtrack, Honey was nearly critically injured last season, and this season basically it's like a spinoff, but it's pretty much season 8. There's just like just picks up right from there. It was just so that Amazon could just launch and give everyone a reason to use the freebie app. What was your biggest surprise, I guess, just for this so far? I mean, I was kind of stoked when I saw a few other people joining this. Oh, freaking William Devane. There's a dude who's been around forever. Who is this billionaire? Is he going to be a good guy? Is he going to be just a random civilian with a lot of money? Who is he?
Yeah, exactly. Biggest surprise for the season of Legacy. Just how Harry adapts to being the private eye. You know, it was kind of
He can't put his hands on someone without repercussions. There's several times when he's questioning the cops and they're like, "You back off now." I'm like,
"Yeah, exactly." Or they're threatening to have his PI license pulled if he doesn't cooperate.
Yeah.
Or being hauled in by the feds for an afternoon.
Oh man. During a final plot twist during the interrogation, which I won't give away. I had to explain to others who were watching it with me. I'm like, why doesn't he just arrest that guy? Because then he'd have to explain that he also technically broke some rules. And he was pretty much just letting the guy know, hey, I'll find someone else to incriminate you on since you're a scumbag. And I know you hire just about every cleaner and hitman in Los Angeles, if not overseas. And I'll just, you know, that's kind of what you got to do. And I'm not surprised just about every real life case. You'll see just about everyone being, you know, who's being prosecuted is like they get them on something else. Okay, I can't get you on the rape charge. It's no good. But 10 years expired. Okay, I guess I'll get you on tax fraud.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you'll serve time one way. I've been waiting to say this one. Stephen Chang here, who plays the hacker. It was so wild. At first, it was like, is that Hector Honey's private eye? No, it's a different guy, but he looks so similar with the giant beard.
Yep.
And I was like, no, he's Asian American. That can't be what's his name? Ryan Hurst's character.
Well, Ryan Hurst's character, yeah. Bonner, Hector Bonner.
Yeah, because it was a similar kind of intimidation. And then I was like, yeah, no, he's so good at hacking. I don't recall Hector doing any hacking.
No, Hector was more like the
he called him a different name, so that was the giveaway.
But he had the height for intimidation if necessary, but with Mo, it's more smooth. You know, it's like when he's trying to find the spot on the McLaren that.
I love how Bosch asks him, is like last chance to leave the room.
Yeah, really.
Before this could technically get you in legal trouble. And he's like, I've been doing hacking for years, dude. Come on.
Yeah, really.
I see a bunch of stuff.
I'm more smooth. I like the smooth.
The jazz was definitely smoother here, too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Some fans hating Maddie's storyline. I didn't really have a problem with it. I mean, it made sense. She had said, like, hey, I want to be just like Dad.
Yep. Well, it's like with Madison, she put in the work between the seasons. You know, I heard that she put on 15 pounds of muscle.
I worked extensively
with Mitzi Roberts and Tim Marsha, the technical advisors, Tim Marsh is a former RHD detective. Mitzi is a current RHD or cold case detective. So, I mean, she put in the work in between seasons. I got to meet her last year when I got to have a set visit. And I mean,
lucky you, man.
Yeah. I was like the first VIP they'd had since the COVID shut everything down for in between season 6 and 7.
Season 7, it looked pretty tight, pretty laid back. I saw Amy Aquino, who I barely miss, you know, this season, just kind of taking a lot of set photos with the recurring characters.
Yeah, exactly. I do miss seeing Grace Billets or even knowing what happened in that storyline from season 7. Because
did she step down, you think?
I don't, well, it's not the stepping down. What I'm worried about is that with Bosch's actions, I mean, Irving didn't officially name her captain of Hollywood Station. Said, you know, I'm going to keep it under wraps because it's not officially yet. And then Bosch leaks to, or gives Scott Anderson the story about Irving basically selling his soul to the devil to, you know, get this guy, you know, Mickey Pena off with like a slap on the wrist or a CIA.
Yeah,
you know,
and then he decides. I was
curious if there was any fallout from that. Yeah, Irving would take a big hit, but.
Because remember, then he also. Yeah, then his fiance was like, you don't need this political career. And he's like, you're right. Like,
well, yeah, exactly.
So he just needed to retire, basically. He just didn't. He was just sick of everything. I was expecting Beryl and Crate to come back, but I didn't expect it right away. And so when they did, I was like, whoa.
Yep.
They're going to get into some trouble here.
Yeah, but it was also sad to see them as retired, you know, that now they're retired, but they're never officially.
I'm sure. So, did they ever join a private eye firm in the books? It seems like that's kind of what they're hinting at. It's like,
well, they're only in one book, and the characters of Crate and Beryl were IA detectives and well hated.
They changed that around.
So they changed it around. They made them, you know, homicide detectives from seasons 1 through 5, you know, working with Harry or alongside Harry. And, you know, and obviously they're, you know, big time fan favorites, Crate and Beryl. So,
yeah.
So if you take the characters from the book, you know, it's totally opposite of the characters from the book and they're lovable. So that's why I love about the, at least being able to see them in a couple episodes during Legacy. So be, you know, having. Right. Harry's boots on the ground to get close enough to call Rogers and his crew to possibly find out what they were up to.
And totally. The suspects definitely remind me of kind of a mix of season 4 for 6, just the kind of characters who is like leaving a giant breadcrumb and you weren't sure which trail it would actually venture off to. And then next thing you know, it's not anything you expected. And you're like, yeah, exactly. Whoa. Because, yeah, it's like 1 in 7. And this is not a critique at all. They kind of go for more just like a giant corporate. Is like there's either like like a killer who's like basically a copycat or a corporation that's just feeding into the pocket of one other main culprit that may or may not be involved. And it was wild for me how this is like again into all these shipping yards and other giant crates that are housing all this stuff, and then is like next thing you know. Kind of like every other season of, or shall I say episode of something like NCIS or 24, the main big bad just gets assassinated by the main assassin and the real big bad shows up. It's so wild how Chandler is like investigating and she's almost expecting to have to use her gun. And the next thing you know, the guy who you think is going to hunt her ends up dead.
Yeah, exactly. I was also worried about Honey Chandler though too with, you know, with she was kind of pushing her way in for, you know, getting information from, what's the character's name? She was threatening his, you know, his son's, you know, being, you know, basically committing bank fraud, I think is what it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a real slime bag. And then when you, slime ball is technically the right word, but I mean, it's just so wild out. Yeah. They're able to coerce him into testifying, and it just shows that like the homicide guys weren't doing their job.
Yeah,
and they're intimidated, don't want to help, and then like 3 other corporate guys show their face and say, "You got to kill Bosch. He knows too much."
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of strings, you know, in this first season of Legacy. So, and then like I said, with the Honey Chandler though, kind of. You know, trying to go after Carl Rogers for what happened the season before. You know, I was worried about her possibly leaving fingerprints, literal fingerprints, you know, over the crime scenes. You know, she goes to meet, what's the guy's name? The financial advisor for Carl Rogers. She goes to his house and she fishes the phone out of the pool. You know, it's like she's leaving fingerprints all over the place.
Yeah.
And same with the shipping container at the shipping yard. It's shipping, like she's opening the shipping container. She's closing the shipping container. It's like, okay, you know.
So my prediction is Crate and Beryl are going to be in a drunken DUI and they're going to need some extra money to make bail, and they're going to join Bosch's PI firm.
Ooh, that'd be nice. Maybe not that I'm getting in trouble, but just joining.
Well, I don't mean necessarily trouble, just a simple, hey, I'm speeding. Come on.
Yeah, really. I'm helping out.
It would be, I would be funny to me if something like that happened, because it'd be a throwback to like season, I think it was 6 or 7, where they got in a fender bender.
Season 5, yep.
Yeah. It's like they're chasing a suspect.
They weren't chasing, they were responding to the pharmacy.
It's like he said left or right, and he meant wrong. His right.
Yep. And then Powers comes, or you know, Powers comes through the intersection, burning through the intersection, and T-bones their vehicle. And
oh man.
And then Crate and Barrel, I think, got the worst of that for punishment wise, you know, being assigned to Caps, and or you know, Captain Cooper saying, you know, trying to push him out type of thing, you know, Captain Cooper slime ball.
You're right.
So happy to see Grace Billeth close out that chapter of the
I was still worried though, because I mean the squad commander's still there doing a good job, and J. Edgar was still there. Yes, that's his name, guys, Jerry Edgar. But then I saw is like, oh, Lieutenant First Thorne, you know,
yep,
is the commander of Maddie's Schiff. Oh, well, I'm just worried he's going to say something or make it personal, like, you're Bosch's kid, aren't you?
Well, he already knows that. But I kind of mentioned that in the Everybody Counts podcast when they're recapping season or Bosch Legacy episode 6. When Maddie wants to respond to the officer shot, you know, Thorne's like, no, that'd be too many, you know, too many police around type of thing. You know, go see Mank and get your assignment. But then you still see officers going out the door where it's like, well, why is Maddie singled out? Is it A, because she's a rookie cop, or is it B, because she is Bosch's daughter? But then we get the Mank, you know, call back. You know, Mank makes a few appearances, so I was happy to see that Mank's still around in Hollywood too.
Mank.
Sergeant Mankiewicz.
Mankiewicz. I'm sorry. I'm trying to think.
It's all right. He sends first episode, season 1, he sends Bosch out to look at the Kenny Humerus and go check out this humerus. You know, Sergeant Mankiewicz.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was meaning. I was like, it seemed pretty cool that he was showing up there briefly, and he's overlooking just the realm of things, as opposed to, because I just was worried about him at first. Like he was kind of friendly with many people, but I was just afraid that it seemed like so many people in the department were going to be replaced. It's like, no, they're just pretty much trying to get rid of Bosch, and Bosch, you know, to protect his legacy, decided, no, screw it, I quit.
Yeah, really.
He said it before, I don't do politics. And I love it. And there's like a few different times where people come up to him and he's like, damn it, this is what I hate. You're getting political with me. I want to just solve the crime.
Yeah, really. You know, don't involve politics into it. Let me solve who killed the person. You know, you see that plenty during the 7 seasons.
He believes in discretion. Is like, if he's going to vote for someone, you're only going to know if you look up, you know, his voter registration. You know, he's not.
Exactly.
And it was kind of wild how they even showed. I really dug it. Kind of took me aback at first, but I really dug it. I understood why they did the edit when they, in like a second to last episode, when they're showing him interrogating one of the main culprits, they do a flashback to one of his first interrogations and how he's like totally like anti-torture. Is like, dude, but
yep,
this is, we're supposed to be good guys.
Yeah, it has a flashback to Afghanistan in 2003, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it shakes us up as the viewer, and it doesn't even involve any shaky camera or much explosions. It's just kind of just showing, like, it just, that was the day where he just started to play ball and say, okay, I guess I'm gonna be a squad member as opposed to the leader I want to be, since my heroes are basically dead. I'm seeing the ugly side of life.
Yeah, exactly.
Phil Morris, who you might know as for his various Star Trek roles and the 80s Mission Impossible, you know, man, he was just relentless as the guy, you know, who would invite some to help solve the billionaire's cold case, and then next thing you know is like that gets all messy and no one is who they were 40 minutes ago. There were several times where, you know, again, this is a kind of show, guys, who when you're watching it, you got to do 2 to 3 episodes at a time. You'll forget something.
Yeah, exactly.
And I had so many people wanting to bail out because it was late. I'm like, just one more. It's a slow burn, but it's worth it. And I don't think it's even really slow by even slow burn standards, but it's just, there's so many who want to bail after one. I'm like, it's not going to wrap up. You know, next thing you know, there's a car crash.
Yeah, exactly.
It was wild how Maddie had to reveal just some cops who might have taken misleading videos and then use other squad commanders' videos. And then they're having the whole argument over, I feel like you're exploiting my daughter. And it's like, well, I just need her body cam to take video of some other guys who did a questionable deal at the shooting.
Yeah, to authenticate her body cam footage. Yeah, that's just it with that whole, you know, clash towards the end of the season, where it's like Bosch and Honey kind of have a love hate, you know, not relationship, but
yeah, he always says one last time. It's like it's never gonna be the last time.
So I was hoping they were going to get along throughout the whole season this time, because you really saw the dynamic when they come together to work together.
They finally realize they have more in common than they realize. It's just
exactly. And then you see that how pissed off Harry is when he sees the body cam footage from the takedown on Moe's computer, that he's going through the footage and everything. He's like, so you kind of see the wheels turning in Harry's head, where it's like, and Honey tried explaining it. I see Honey's point, you know, where it's like, all she wants to do is authenticate the video.
She's like, the best I can do is just have her come in and just say, yes, this is mine, and then that's it. And Bosch is just afraid of many things. Her being on the news, her being outed by her police squad saying, I can't trust you. You know, he's afraid of all kinds of locker room talk.
Exactly, and repercussions on her career, considering she's just a boot and they can pretty much kick her out for whatever reason they want at this point.
The courtroom during the
first year.
Yeah, the courtroom scenes were even kind of similar to the last 2 years, kind of. Like, some of the suspects they had this time almost remind me of that one terrorist family.
Oh, the 308s?
I think that was in season 6, yeah, and then season 7, some of the same kind of assholes who are just very sour. They don't, you know, that they get very confrontational in court as much as they can be without, you know, getting disbarred. But it's like, man, it's very hostile.
Yeah, exactly. But overall, I was happy with the first season of Legacy, obviously, because, you know, big fan. But, you know, I was also happy that they went back to the 10 episode format instead of, because I know they went to 8 episodes for season 7. And it kind of felt rushed almost, those last 2 or 3 episodes where they were trying to cover too much and not enough time type of thing.
What do I know? I guess I've just always dug their pacing, because, I mean, you know, Eric Overmyer worked on Homicide and he was all about, you know, just use proper diction that a police officer would use and then have another officer fill in the gap, explain both to the audience and to the other characters what's going on. They just have a good observational point of storytelling.
Yeah, I never saw Homicide. I know he also worked on The Wire.
Yeah,
I started watching The Wire as well, but I mean, obviously Bosch kind of takes front burner type of thing. So eventually I'm going to go back and watch the whole series of The Wire. About halfway through the first season, something like that.
Yeah, you can find Homicide on discounted eBay DVDs from Shout Factory and The Wire. Yeah, it's on HBO Max and a bunch of other outlets. Yeah, I mean, that's what was kind of the big draw for me. I was like, oh, Jamie Hector, he was really evil in that last season of Wire. Oh, Lance Reddick, he was also part of the police squad in The Wire. And so I was just, when I saw, I mean, it's kind of interesting how some people who have been fans of similar shows, kind of like The Shield and NYPD Blue, have gotten into this. And there's others who I think they just mainly just saw it just because it was a very promoted Amazon Prime show, and they're like, yeah, this. I still see a lot of critics who just don't seem to, they kind of give a lukewarm, nice or meh review, where they're just like, it's another cop show, but they don't explain why they think it's another cop show, because it's very different from the typical Who Killed Who.
Yeah, exactly. It's I remember seeing like shows like NYPD Blue Law and Order, stuff like that, where it's like you solve a case every episode. And that's what I love about Bosch. It's not that typical, we're solving a case every episode. It's solving two or three cases throughout a 10 episode season.
Right.
I don't know if The Wire ever did that. Like I said, I still have a few shows.
The Wire will do a murder, but it'll often just kind of show being an excuse for something to affect someone. I kind of do feel like Crate and Barrel were always kind of the Finn and Munch from SVU or Laurel and Hardy, the team.
Yeah.
Yep. And that there's similar characters like that on Homicide. I mean, hell, that's where Munch first was. But it's interesting how. I mean, all together, just these new characters just kind of formed their own kind of unofficial squad, and Harry's not doing it all by himself. I like some of the other double crosses where he's trying to save, I think it was a Puerto Rican family who's entitled to the billionaires.
Maybe not Puerto Rican, but yeah,
Hispanic family. And just the actors there, you know, I've seen them in bit parts and key guest starring roles, and they were really good for their brief 20 minutes each episode. And
yeah,
once again, exactly. That female assassin was very vicious.
Yeah, actually, she's from what I've read, or I think Titus posted on Twitter, she's actually one of the stunt coordinators on the set. I mean, she's worked on other shows, other movies, but. So they kind of wanted to give her a role to kind of.
I did see that she had a lot of stunt credits. So I was like, "That's cool."
Yeah, exactly. So, and I don't know if are we doing spoilers for episode 10 or not or what?
I guess we could just say it really does end on a giant cliffhanger, and I was like, "Oh, they're not going to do that, are they?" And it's like,
well, yeah, I was expecting something different than that. I was talking more about the showdown with Bosch and the assassin. Or can I say something that might spoil it for some people?
Sure. Okay. So 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You guys have been warned.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Bosch and the assassin have a showdown. And what I noticed when they were having the showdown in that country house is that where the confrontation ends, Bosch gets her. And there's plastic on the stairs, the walls, over the window. And I had asked on the podcast for Tracy or Pete if they interview anybody from, you know, like either Michael Conley or Overmyer or Tom Bernardo, somebody that, you know, is in the real know, or even Titus himself, considering he co-wrote that episode.
Yeah.
Was that an actual kill spot that Bosch set up? You know, that the character set up, because you knew that's where the final confrontation was going to end. Mm-hmm. You know, he knew he was going to take her out, because obviously he knows how many bullets he had in his gun. So he counts up 6 shots. He makes clicks the gun or tries shooting the gun when it's empty. Just didn't, you know, get her to think, well, he's out of bullets, you know. So she goes, you know, it's only a 6 guns or 6 shooter type of thing. And then when he gets her, he goes, you know, always count the guns type of thing. And, you know, so I was curious if that was actually set up as a kill pad by Bosch himself at that spot in the stairway there. Or was that house just under construction for some reason or another, and that class just happened to be there?
I mean, so I'm kind of curious. It was pretty heavily armored. I mean, he definitely was using a lot of his tactical stuff, especially with the whole just counting his bullets and everything.
Yep. So that's what I was curious about, if or maybe just pose that as a question to people when you post this on the social media, you know, did Bosch actually set that up as a kill spot in the house, or was it under construction for some reason?
I might as well say it's been a minute, but what I mean is it's been a few months. But yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it definitely felt like he drew her into a trap.
Yeah, exactly.
But
that's what I was thinking when I saw that. That's what I was thinking. But at the same time, you never see him set it up other than being at the house and surveying the cameras when the assassin shows up to that country house there. So, but I wouldn't be surprised, you know, knowing Bosch's skill set, you know, it's like kind of like luring
Trevor Dobbs into those tripwires,
luring Trevor Dobbs into the tripwires in season 3. You know, you set up the tripwire on the feet.
Bob sees
it, but doesn't catch the one at his neck and runs right into it. You know, so Bosch sets that up in season 3. So I'm guessing that's what what transpired in Bosch Legacy episode 10 here with the assassin is he had it
oh
set
yeah
up
that last there. Part definitely okay yeah but he didn't seem to know the house or the insides and outs. He was kind of just ready for the inevitable. It's just like it's not like it was a murder suicide or something like that, but it was kind of one of those like either way she's not leaving.
Yeah, I don't think it was set up as a murder suicide either. I just think the character, you know, knew that's where it was going to end for her. You know, that he's deliberately, you know, he knew how many shots he shot off. And the only reason he shot an empty gun is to let her know, oh, I'm out of bullets. And then he pops up with
I know, that's a lot to break down.
The other guy's gun. So it's a little bit to break down.
Yeah, and it leaves you with a lot to think about.
Yeah, that's why I said, you know, it's like, because you see the plastic on the ground, walls, stairs, and everything. And because I was thinking about it. I can't remember if I'd asked, because Conley hosted a Bosch Bash watch for that episode 10. I can't remember if I'd asked him if it was, you know, set up that way. Actually, I don't think I asked because there was some areas that weren't able to see it yet, like Germany. They didn't get the show until about late July, I want to say, mid to late July.
The group did pretty good at avoiding spoilers. I was like, I waited the full 10 weeks just so I could just binge it in free nights.
Ah, there you go. I, of course, binged it many times throughout each weekend.
My sister will do that with Mandalorian, which Ty just guest starred on one episode of, but I'm like, I don't want to rewatch the same episode. I'd rather watch it in 1 year and then maybe watch it again the next year, maybe.
I try to watch each episode 3 to 4 times just to kind of take in everything.
Oh, okay. Well,
and then with the trivia questions, I kind of a deep dive. But with Legacy, I just wanted to grab, you know, 5 to 10 questions per episode to set things up down the road. So I'll watch it 3 or 4 times just to kind of take it in, kind of see if there was something that I didn't notice before that I noticed the second, third time around. So
they're out fun. There.
But also going back to the Madison, you know, that, you know, some people were criticizing the acting or just her demeanor, yeah. But I actually enjoyed the scene where she was kind of tracking down Sneezy, you know, in the squad car where she's putting all these phone calls into Sneezy's contacts in the book there, and it's like, you know, Sneezy, you know. Mm-hmm. So Madison, I think, did a great job with that scene. I mean, she did a great job in general throughout the whole entire series. You know, every year, every season, she gets more and more, you know, on screen time, which I actually enjoyed seeing.
Right.
So plus it's not like a boot's going to get everything right off the bat. You know, she's going to make her mistakes just like any other rookie officer would do, even though she is a legacy.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. I mean, they kind of established right up front she's going to get yelled at by these guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Are very controlling and want things done a certain way. I thought it did a better job of just kind of just showing the whole having to force yourself to suck it up. It's never easy for anybody, especially in a new gig.
Well, that's why I kind of like the conversation that Madison has with Bosch at the courthouse. You know, she asks if he ever got written up when he was a boot, and he's, you know, saying, you know, damn it, I barely made it out of the academy. You know, they said I always had a deep-seated disdain for authority, and it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then her, you know, going back, boy, did they have that wrong? It's like, right? You know.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
We're on all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
So you kind of see that, you kind of see both of them kind of doing the humorous side on in that conversation.
Like fodder, like daughter.
Exactly. So it was good to see, you know, also the realism of it. I didn't know there was any punishment for, you know, separating from your partner when you're chasing multiple suspects, you know, when they split up. You know, Maddie chases after one, or training officer chases after another. I didn't know there could be punishment for that. So,
I think there is. I've seen it on other fictional cop shows. I've seen it also kind of just in other stuff. Like if you just deviate, you know, it's not like, you know, Lethal Weapon where they let detectives get more away with something. I think they do allow them something, but you know, they can write anybody up. And
yeah, exactly.
If they're under pressure or feel like you're just, you know, doing whatever, just endangering others. Altogether, it's just kind of interesting just seeing I think she'll still stick with the LAPD thing. I don't think she's gonna quit, because I know she did.
I don't think so either.
She did that legal consulting thing and that wasn't working out because basically everyone was trying to talk smack about her dad.
Yeah, exactly. Being a cop's daughter, you know, working for a defense attorney. It's only so long that would, you know, where the two worlds would clash, basically. So, yeah.
Oh, totally. I don't see anything wrong with the performance. It seems like a lot of people just, in general, just hate kid actors. And it's like, there are good kid actors. It's just,
yeah, exactly. I agree. Yeah. Madison did a great job. In fact, like, even the newer characters they brought in with Rena Vasquez and, like, we're talking
those
about
guys, earlier, Mo. Those guys were good. It was also just cool to see a few some of the supporting robbery homicide at the same scene as those guys. I'm trying to remember what's his name from Pulp Fiction, who was main keeper.
Calderon Robertson.
Yeah, Calderon. What was his character name again?
Robertson, Detective Robertson.
Yeah, they mentioned him briefly, but it would have been cool to see him.
Yeah, because I think Greg actually announced or said on Bosh Pit in a comment that Paul Calderon was going to be back, and you know, maybe they filmed something and they cut it or something like that, but or maybe Greg was confused because in one of the the other boot officer, her name is Paulina Calderon, called Calderon. Maybe. Ooh. So maybe Greg got confused that it was, you know, Paul Calderon's name being on there instead of
maybe,
you know, not being the character but the actor. So, but it was good to see some of the, you know, some characters, you know, granted, I think Tracy put it really well where you got to see him, but it wasn't overdone where it's like, okay, you know, so some fans might go, okay, it was kind of overdone, you know, with the new character Mo, you know. Mm-hmm. You got to see a good portion of him, but not enough where it's oversaturating with the character. You want more. You don't want less, you know. And that's, you know, with the also Rena Vasquez, you know, it's like some of the conversations that her and Maddie were having, you know, you couldn't tell if Vasquez was being sarcastic with, you know, why did you want to be a police officer talk, you know, and it's like, oh, for the overtime, you know, and it's like, really?
Well, and it's such a good point because, yeah, there's so many shows that, like you say, get a formulaic after a while, or people get so angry at people leaving. And it's like, well, in all fairness, they weren't used all that much last few seasons. So that's boring as an actor to work in long days and coming home and not having time for social life and what have you. If you're not even being used.
Or maybe just that, obviously everything always comes down to money in some shows too. The longer
you're money, the more money raise. Especially if you're gonna do nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it was good to see, you know, Jamie Hector reprising his role as Jerry Edgar. Granted, it was only a 30, 40 second, you know, little blurb, you know, there at the end of episode 6, but it was great to see him. It wasn't overdone. You know, they kind of say, you know, that.
Yeah, it was a natural progression.
Yeah, natural progression. And that's one thing I heard when I was on.
I need your help, Jerry.
Not on set. No, I heard it from a few people that I met with last year. I met with a person.
Isn't it wild how they'll give out all this behind the scenes stuff? I'm like, oh man, you're really trustful.
Yeah. Well, I heard a few things. You know, I heard about, well, I the scenes that I got to see, there was the one with Bosch and Maddie having lunch in episode 5, where they're talking about, you know, Maddie saying that she gave her number to the rape victim, you know, and, you know, and but before that, she was asking him about the house, you know, and he goes, well, I meet with the contractor today, you know, so fingers crossed. So when I was reading that in the script, Scott Sides, I'm like, I look at Asokwe Vasquez, who's a co-producer and writer on Bosch Legacy, and I go, you guys aren't Last Coyote in the Bosch house, are you? He's like, oh yeah, you read the books, don't you? I'm like, trust me, whatever I hear, you know, which is, you know, whatever I hear or see will remain in my head until the episodes air, you know, or at least until everybody had a chance to see it.
Right.
So when I was reading, when I was seeing, like, when the trailer, like either the teaser trailer or the trailer dropped, you know, people were noticing when Bosch was, you know, visiting the house for the, you know, after meeting with the contractor, I think. And you could see that the house was pretty empty, you know, at least the living room there was kind of empty. Even that little blip of a clip, you know, somebody had seen that the house was kind of empty. They're sort of like, oh, I wonder if they're, you know, having an earthquake in this season or something like that. I'm like, damn it. You know, but I didn't confirm or deny, you know, I'm waiting for the episodes to end before I said anything. So, but yeah, so I got to see, you know, a few clips, you know, a few scenes here, or 4 scenes being filmed the day I was on set. But I was told by people, you know, on set, but also the behind the scenes people, there's a digital person that puts in, like, all the, you know, when you see a phone screen and there's a display that pops up, you know, they're the ones that make the phone call or put the picture on the TV screen, stuff like that. And she was saying that they had just read the 6th episode, and it's one of the best episodes they've ever read, not just from Bosch Legacy, but all 7 seasons of Bosch as well.
Nice.
So I'm like, boy, I can't wait to get my hands on a script like that, or B, to see the episode. Right. So obviously, see, episode 6 was where Paulina Calderon gets shot. Maddie wants to respond but doesn't. And Bosch comes out of the bank, hears on the radio that a female patrol
rookie. Yeah, he's thinking it's her.
So he thinks it's her, calls her up on the phone. And it's like that scene, it's like, you know, you get you already know that it's not Madison or Maddie, but at the same time, you're feeling for, you know, Bosch in that scene.
Yeah, the immediacy is very felt.
Yeah. And then, you know, he's tired of the surveillance behind him. So he's like, time to end this shit, and goes to Creighton's house and confronts him. But then it was the conversation with him and Maddie at the end of the episode where he's talking about the bank shootout from the Black Echo. And it's like, oh my God, we finally get to hear the story, you know, because you haven't heard the story in the series. So it's like, and then
especially when we stuck in some Easter eggs, like having the Black Echo
Yep, the Black Echo as a movie or whatever, and Bosch is like, oh, they effed it all up anyways. But but at the end of the conversation, Maddie goes over to the window of his office and says, I miss your view, meaning the house. And Bosch says, I miss her too, meaning Eleanor.
Yeah.
When we were doing the podcast. And we recently
put it together. We know.
Yeah. Well, Valerie, who lives in Australia, myself and Tracy were doing the season or the Bosch Legacy season episode 6 breakdown. And Valerie kind of took that scene as, you know, that was Maddie's way of saying that she missed Eleanor, and Bosch agreed, I miss her too. I didn't take it like that, and neither did Tracy. I always thought it meant, you know, that Maddie actually meant, I miss your house, you know, I miss your view. But Bosch had heard, I miss her type of thing, and he agreed that he misses her too. So when I saw episode 6, I mean, you kind of get the tears in your eyes when you're watching those scenes, you know, with him calling her on the phone and her saying that she's okay, but it was
she's a class actually getting emotional for once.
Yeah, you see him, you see the emotions playing.
That's what I didn't understand too. Some fans were mad at Maddie getting emotional, and this is like, well, it's a drama. Yes.
Yeah.
If anyone was emotionless, you would find them bland and cardboard cutouts. So I don't get it. I really don't get
it.
Especially when Bosch has had his breaking point several times.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're going to find people that'll hate on anything for whatever reason, you know, but me, it's like, I appreciate the work. I appreciate all the work that everybody puts in, not just the actors, but everybody around the cast and crew as well. You know, everybody puts in all this work, you know, from the start, when they're writing, you know, they're starting the process of figuring out which books to use and how to, you know, how to get all these characters involved and everything.
Make it make sense without feeling like over plotting or like, whoa, 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 I'm totally lost.
Yeah, exactly.
You're only going to get lost if you literally have just not been paying any kind of attention.
Yeah, I always do tech free, you know, no phone, no nothing. I'm just going to watch the episode, appreciate it.
I cheat. I do have my phone out, but I'm taking notes. I'm not doodling on whatever.
Yeah, well, that's what Pete had said something about, just having a notebook, you know, in front of him where he writes his thoughts as he's watching the episode for the first time. He's on the Everybody Counts podcast. I'm like, I should do that, not just on my phone, you know, just or transcribe it to my phone later, but just have a notepad. You know, and throw out my thoughts as a first watch through, because obviously, you know, when
you want reactions,
and it's more raw, like you said, raw reaction for the scenes. You know, because we were talking a few weeks ago when we were recording the episode 8 podcast, but we're talking about Sloan. You know, that is he a bad guy? Is he a good guy? Is he playing both sides of the field? You know, and I mentioned that, you know, well, I read the books. I know he's not a bad guy, but I should have mentioned on that podcast that they don't stick to the books all the time. Thankfully, no. They did in this show, or in this, the first season, where Sloan's helping Bosch and playing the Trident Corporation, mm-hmm. or the corporation in general. It's not just Trident. Trident's the security, but. You know, so it was good to see that they actually kept to this, you know, kept to the book on that, because otherwise I'd look like an idiot. Which isn't too hard to do.
Oh, be nice to yourself. So,
I know, I'm just making fun of myself. But I mean, it was a good conversation, you know, because Pete hasn't read the books. So he's kind of going, you know, episode to episode, you know, kind of enjoying the process and not knowing what's down the road. But that's the thing with Bosch, you know, they don't always stick to the books, you know, like season 4, you know, it's not the person that killed Bosch's mom. It's not the same one that's in the books, you know, they kind of go off script a little bit. Same with like season 2 for Trunk Music, different killer, you know, different, slightly different plot, different killer of Tony Allen and stuff.
Different
like
outcome.
That, so. Right. Different outcomes, you know, so they change things up all the time, which is, it's good, because then, you know, keeps us, the viewers who have read the books, on our toes a little bit. It's like, well, is this going to be different? You know, is this person going to be a bad guy instead of a good guy? You know, so that, mm-hmm. so when it came to Sloan, you know, still being a good guy, it was good to see it. You know, I was happy to see it.
Yeah, it was good. it also doesn't feel like they just run inspired and just took everything just like off the pages with no creative input. Because yeah. That's always key for me. I really don't like it when I just see just everyone kind of just they're adapting, and yet you, the viewer, regardless of your relation to it, feel like you're a little left out. It's like, no, they did a good job.
Yeah, exactly. And that goes, you know, all the way to the writing, you know, starting off with the writing, obviously.
They've written shows like that before, but they've also done ones that were known for their characters rather than for the plotting. And they unfortunately do have a lot of very reliable filmmakers who've worked on it and added their two cents. So that's good too.
Yeah, it's a good collaboration. That's a big word nowadays with, you know, everything. It's good to see how they all come together and bring out this every year, which is a great thing too, you know. It's like, yeah. There's some Amazon shows that come out every year and a half, 2 years. I know HBO kind of did that too, where they took long breaks between seasons for like The Sopranos or Game of Thrones. And, you know, that's why it's like
us fans, you know, rolled, I think, and they had to, basically.
Yeah, and it's good to see us fans get a new season every year. You know, even with the COVID, we got episode or season 7. Granted, it was a little bit later in the year, you know, that we got it in 2021, but we still got a new season of Bosch, you know. So seeing that every year, getting new content every year, you know.
I don't see who else could have played Harry. Bosch. I mean, I don't either. On one rare occasion, I saw one person who was like, hey, I don't think he's a bad actor. He's not my version of Bosch. I was like, see, even before, you know, I even put two and two together, realizing those were based on those same Connolly books I had read and what had you, City of Bones and what have you. I was like, yeah, no, this makes sense. He's that kind of actor who's been kind of a chameleon, who's been, I mean, I've seen him. He's on a great episode of The Closer, which is a similar show in general, where you got very witty detectives as well as office politics and like five double-edged mysteries back to back. He was on one where he was like a victim's dad, and you thought, oh, he did it. He didn't do it.
Touch? I think that was called Touch with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, he's on there too. Yeah, and you think at first, oh, he's a bad guy. He's like, no, he's just a retired firefighter who knew the character's deceased wife on 9/11. But he has that way of just kind of coming in, and you just never know until you know. And
I believe it was that role on Touch that Michael Connelly spotted him or really fell in love with him as an actor.
Really?
Gosh, yeah, because it was like he was in that show for 3 episodes.
Yeah.
So, and then he was off filming the Transformers movie.
When I saw that, I made a funny, yes, I watch junkie movies. I happened to be at a theater screening, and I joked, the guy from Sons of Anarchy is going to probably get it. And I had a bit of laughter in the audience. They knew what he was from. So he's enjoyed a career of, you may not know my name, but I know you know my face. I'm going to either be
exactly
unpredictable, really funny, or just a flat out just diabolical villain.
Yep. And then what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago, he put on Twitter he's gonna be Lex Luthor in the show Titans on HBO, if I'm not mistaken. I think HBO has the show Titans for the DC universe.
Really?
Yeah, so he's gonna be Lex Luthor. So the picture that he shared was, you know, him and, you know, bald head but full beard, because he had a full beard in between seasons of Legacy here before filming started for season 2.
Okay, so he had this
big, thick, full beard but bald head. So somebody asked him on Twitter, did you actually shave your head? And he's like, no, it's a bald cap, you know, that they put a bald cap over his head to give him the bald look for Lex Luthor for the show Titans. I think
he's telling my sister that now.
Say what?
I'm telling my sister that now.
Awesome. And I've seen Titans on HBO Max. I just never watched the episodes, but knowing that Titus is going to show up in season 4, I'm like, hell, I gotta go back and watch the first 3 seasons then, so I'm caught up when Titus makes an appearance here.
Well, yeah, there's a connection. I kind of felt like every other Amazon show is kind of learning from Bosch, and there's kind of a connection with Titans. The guy who plays the lead on Reacher, you know, is on the, is also on Titans. And
oh, really? I didn't know that.
And that's what was his start, and that's what got him this gig. And I, you know, I hadn't seen Titans yet at that time, and I was like, yeah, yeah, he seems physically agile and like a really nice guy. He seems like he has charisma. So, but yeah, I think after Expanse and Bosch and the success of Reacher, people liked it because it was less like the Tom Cruise movies and more like the books. And those who don't know about it pretty much still get the essence of it. It's a Bourne Identity, Fugitive, NCIS kind of show. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Terminalist is another thing.
And I never read the Jack Reacher books, but I was interested in the, you know, in the show. So I watched the show because I watched the two Tom Cruise movies. And like you said, it kept getting, you know, Tom Cruise is too small for the role. He's too short, blah, blah, blah. It was, you know, a crappy rendition of the character. So when I saw that there was going to be a TV show on Prime, I made sure I tuned in to see if, you know, it was going to be any good. And I actually enjoyed that first season.
That seems to be their deal. Adapt a popular book. And
not only that, but have the author do a cameo.
Oh, really?
In the final episode of Jack Reacher of the first season. I can't remember if it was eight. I think it was eight episodes.
I think Lee Childs is her. Is the name?
Yep, Lee Childs makes an appearance in the final episode of season one.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, no, they're doing a Conley bit because Conley had quite a few cameos throughout the years of Bosch.
I didn't know that. So I'll try to watch Reacher again with that. Where does Conley cameo in
Bosch? Conley's had quite a few cameos. He was the original Santa Claus in the pilot episode, and then from what I heard, when they were doing the refilmings, Henrik Bastian stepped in for the Santa Claus. He's the another executive producer. So Conley's had cameos in season four. He was a guy sitting at a bar,
just not speaking, basically a feature.
Not
extra.
Speaking, just sitting at the bar and having a drink. And then in season five, I can't remember what I know it's season five. He has a cameo somewhere. In season six, he's walking past Detective Vega, and she says, "Hey, Mike, what's up?" And he goes, "Yeah, how's it going?" And he's walking by, you know, Hollywood Station. That's episode 10. And then he appears in the background of Musso and Frank's in season seven, episode eight, after they got the results from who's going to be transferred to West Bureau. And Detective Pierce sees that he's going to be the late shift detective, so he's kind of bummed about it. So they all meet at Musso and Frank's, and Michael Conley's sitting in the background when Maddie comes in and talks to Bosch
about that scene.
Yeah, so he's had four or five cameos throughout Bosch. No cameo in Legacy because somebody asked him if he had a cameo in Legacy. He's like, not yet. So I'll be looking.
I take it he's probably not even paid as an extra, so he's just showing up and having fun on set.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So. And that's got to be fun as the creator, you know, being able to sit in on, you know, scenes every now and then.
Always. And I saw a cool article. As you know, there was a similar show that was based on some books. I didn't read them, but I really enjoyed the show. It was The Terminal List, which was another conspiracy involving Navy staff and, again, Fugitive on the Run. And it kind of got blasted by critics. I don't know if how much of it was just not liking Chris Pratt's personal life or what have you. I was like, hey, it's a very entertaining show. But what's funny enough is one person kind of summed it up. Is like, this, The Terminal List joins Bosch and Reacher as the ultimate dad shows.
Like, oh,
interesting. Interesting. Yeah. And it's like, because you kind of joke about dad humor every once in a while. And it's like, yeah, there might just be. But every once in a while, everyone's brought up, oh, that's a dad movie. That's a. Mm-hmm. Dad show. I'm like, yeah,
that's on my list to watch because I didn't know if it dropped all at once like Bosch used to do or Bosch
I think
did.
It did just like
so I didn't know if it dropped all at once. I was waiting for the whole series to drop so I could watch it and not have to, you know, stop or wait week to week type of a deal. So
it seemed like it was kind of all at once, and I wasn't sure at the first 20 minutes, but then eventually I just catered to it. I was like, okay, now they're really doing a 180. Now this is getting interesting.
Yeah, a coworker was just mentioning that show to me earlier today. He said that he was watching, you know, he had started it a little bit ago and he was like eight or nine episodes in. I'm like, oh, good, as the full first season dropped, you know. So I'll throw that on my list of a show to watch soon here. So,
well, and the worst part is when you're trying to watch a show and no one can really sell it for you. And it seems like it was a pretty easy sell. This is like, it's a conspiracy, but it's an even different kind of conspiracy. Now it's a matter of, instead of just unlikely allies, now it's basically the characters having to slowly reveal different shades of their past and then even decipher if that meant what they thought they meant, as opposed to the usual betrayals. And now this Amazon take on Lord of the Rings seems to be taken off. It's survived a lot of skeptics who were like, how dare you remake it? It's like, it's a different adaptation, guys. It's been 10 years. It's not it's not like we're remaking freaking Star Wars, for God's sakes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually enjoying that one and the House of Dragon as well, or House of the Dragon. HBO Max. So it's good to catch up with old, or not really old characters, but new characters from a new show, from, you know,
that's a spinoff
from another show or movie series.
Not too much to have to catch up on. It's all just like, can see it all at once, take a month apart of it for each one.
Yeah, exactly. That's slow burns on those, you know, type of things. So
right. So when is season two of Legacy going to drop, you think?
Probably around the same time as, I mean, obviously I don't have inside knowledge, but I think they're filming the sixth or seventh episode right now, or about to start the seventh.
All right.
So somewhere in there. So probably around April, May next year is what I'm hoping for.
That's fast.
Yeah. Well, they do. What is it? I think I heard something about 8 days to film each episode. For 8 to 10 days to film each episode, and I'm pretty sure they're, you know, editing as they go through. You know, they're not going to wait for everything to be, you know, recorded to edit everything all at once. So
you're right,
but I am curious to see how it's gonna, you know, because from what I heard, they're gonna you know, basically leave off right where episode 10 concluded. And from what I heard, it's gonna be, you know, 2 or 3 episodes covering the aftermath of that, and then jumping forward a little bit to cover the new the crossing is going to be a focal point for season two of Legacy. So I'm hoping April, May of next year. So I'm actually heading out to LA next week. I don't know about a set visit again, but I'm taking my older two kids this time around and showing them the sights from the show and stuff. So
that was a good add-on. Do you remember that one scene where they're at the actual taco shop owned by character actor Danny Trejo?
Yeah, the donut shop. Yeah, Trejo's right. Donuts.
Was it
the donut shop? It's on the list of places to hit.
Huh? Okay. Well, it was a donut shop. Yeah, it's
a donut and coffee shop. So.
Okay.
But Danny Trejo does have tacos as well. He does have taco shops as well.
That's what I was thinking. Okay. Well, I just found it funny how the, Maddie's training officer is like, yeah, you fan of Danny Trejo? And she starts mentioning off movies from Dusk Till Dawn. And Maddie's like, I've never seen
it. Right over her head.
Not a movie gal. More of a book.
Yeah, that's just, well, neither is Bosch though, too.
He's just a jazz musician. You know? He does, and so, a lot of people assume that, you know, I've seen some police officers come home and talk about their favorite shows, but truth be told, I mean, a lot of people don't want to watch anything that's really too close to home, which is kind of funny because some of them are the same ones who will complain if there's inaccuracies in a movie and one and app and blah blah blah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a fine line that you always draw, and sometimes you gotta just say, okay, well, you guys are too close to this. So I mean,
yeah, a little too close.
Too close.
But and that's the flashback scene in season or episode 8 where they flash back to Bosch as a younger,
and
you know, just join the
his son, the real life son.
Yeah, Damon Welliver playing a younger Bosch,
and he was even also older this time. So.
Yep. Also, the throwback to the Lincoln lawyer character from Matthew McConaughey, where, you know, Bosch goes to the door and, you know, young kids that opens the door and it's like Bosch says, you know, hey, what's your name? And the kid, you know, and then the father comes to the door. It's like, what did I tell you about answering door to strangers? And, well, you have to go finish your lunch. And the kid's like, all right, all right.
I didn't think about that, but yeah.
Little Easter egg to Matthew McConaughey. And when you pause it, you don't see what the characters' names are. They're listed as father and kid or something like that. It doesn't list a name because obviously the Mickey Haller rights are owned by different company for mm-hmm. having a show on Netflix now.
Versus Prime.
Yep. So I was really hoping that Prime was going to pick up the rights for the Lincoln Lawyer. Because when I heard that season,
it's like it was supposed to be on CBS, and they basically dropped it, which went against the contract as a whole. I don't know why anyone would just want to just not air something, but a lot of networks are doing that now, and I don't get it. It's money down the drain.
But I was really hoping Amazon would pick it up few months beforehand, we heard that season 7 of Bosch was only going to be 8 episodes. I'm like, well, hell, pick up the Mickey Haller rights from Amazon. You can write in 2 episodes where it introduces that character and that first season of Haller or the Lincoln Lawyer.
And for those that don't know, Netflix picked it up. In the books, he's the half brother of the Haller Lawyer.
I forgot to mention that. Yeah.
No, exactly.
So people were really hoping for crossovers, and once when Netflix got the rights for the show, it's like people are like, oh, is there gonna be crossovers with Titus Welliver making an appearance, because they were covering the first season of Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix. They were covering the Brass Verdict, where Harry Bosch and Mickey Haller meet for the first time officially. So people were thinking that Bosch was going to be a part of the Lincoln Lawyer, and, Michael Connelly said, no, we can't, competing entities, to get these two to work together, you're better off solving world peace than getting these two companies to work together. So they had to, somebody had mentioned like something about, as like an inside thing, just name the detective.
I made Barry, a few jokes.
Barry Hosh, instead of Harry Bosch.
Have Welliver pop up, but don't say his name.
Yeah, exactly. Or have Titus Welliver just walk in as a cop or something like that, just to have him in the show. But but it's good to see that, it's good to see that the Lincoln Lawyer is getting a second season as well. So I was happy to see that. And I was really happy.
David
really
E. Kelly, man, being the showrunner.
Showrunner David Kelly.
Freaking LA Tom Law, Humphrey. Boston Legal.
Yeah, a lot of credits, Michael Connelly himself being involved with that. And also another show that they just filmed the pilot for on Catalina Island called Avalon. They just wrapped up filming a pilot episode for that for either ABC or CBS, I want to say, something like that. So it's based off of another Connelly short story about a detective on Catalina Island. So Michael Connelly's got all of his, got fingers in all these different, projects going on all at once. You wonder if he's,
he getting any sleep.
Yeah. Plus writing the new book that comes out in just over a month. So Desert Star coming out in November.
That is wild.
But yeah, so it's like he's got all these projects going on and keeps busy. Very, very, very busy. So it was good to see Legacy kind of what I liked about the cliffhanger ending with the cliffhanger ending with that. A lot of people were pissed. It's like, well, when's the next episode? It's going to be a year.
It's like they're not used to the cliffhangers.
Exactly. And what I was happy about was that this makes it prove that the writers and the showrunners knew there was going to be a second season.
They're not playing it safe. There's going to be consequences.
And you see that kind of with other shows. I was watching, the Lance Reddick show on Netflix, Resident Evil. Is that it?
Oh,
where
I didn't know he was on it.
First season of, I want to say Resident Evil. Anyways, first season drops. So I'm watching it, ends on a cliffhanger. And then they say, well, there's not going to be a second season. We cancel it. Well, why end it on a cliffhanger for season one then?
That's why I go by the Sean Ryan book. That dude wrote for The Shield, The Unit, a bunch of other shows. And he was all back with just, hey, just wrap every season up so that way you don't have to fill in the dots should you get canceled.
Yeah, exactly. But that's why I love the ending for, well, it was announced, I think a week before Legacy, the first four episodes dropped for Legacy, it was announced that there was going to be a second season. So I was happy to see that, hear that. But when I saw, when you saw the cliffhanger ending, it's like, well, you knew there was going to be a second season. They knew there was going to be a second season when they wrote it. So I was, you know, I was happy, very, very happy that I knew there was going to be more Bosch content coming.
Well, you need that because the best shows that stay on the air, you know, I love it when there's a cliffhanger, especially with any other procedural, static or not. Seems like a lot of the gangster shows are doing that. But I mean, they're all pretty much the ones that fade out are the ones that just kind of have too many unneeded subplots or just, you know, every character feels like a plot device just for the sake of shit hitting the fan. So it's just cool to know that they're having stuff hit the fan, but it just feels earned. It's just like no easy escape.
Yeah.
Those who started off with the show, please catch up with it. I know many who started with it and they just couldn't keep up with it. And I pretty much binged it all the final year season 7 came out. I'd seen parts and clips, but I was just like, I'm going to wait till I got zero distractions from college.
Yeah, there you go. That's always a good thing to tackle a show when there's no distractions.
And
then you can pick up all the little Easter eggs or things that you might have overlooked.
The thing is, even though they sound similar on paper to all these other shows, I don't think they would have survived on network TV or even cable. Just because people forget it. Around the 2010s, a lot of the market was really changing a lot back then. People were trying to figure out how to make money off of streaming and doing the DVD versus Blu-ray arguments. You know, there's still seasons of Bosch that probably won't ever make it on the physical media. It's all about, you know, make it on their Prime.
Yep. I know it's sold in like other countries on Blu-ray or DVD. And
I saw some of that. There's like the first four seasons for now.
Yeah. So I wouldn't mind having the physical copies, but hey, you know, if it's available on streaming, you know, maybe, you know, say a solar flare takes out all electronics or something like that. maybe we can get it on DVD back there after that point.
Hopefully. Pinky promise.
Pinky promise. Or fingers crossed type of thing, but you know, so
every Blu-ray counts.
Say what?
Every Blu-ray counts.
Every Blu-ray counts or no Blu-ray counts.
Every DVD counts.
But it's also those like the behind the scenes stuff that you get from the, you know, DVDs, Blu-ray, you know, you can get like the commentary throughout the whole thing. Or
yeah, it's as good as you're going to get for all the extras. Sometimes they'll take all the featurettes that were on the on-demand subscriber or on the streaming platform and import them as Blu-ray featurettes.
Yep. What I would love to see too is the original pilot episode, because they did recast Honey Chandler because the actress they originally had gotten to film it, I think, had another project going on. So that's when they brought Mimi Rogers. And
she's a good actress, but
I'd totally forgotten that.
That's what was confusing at first. I saw her credited on it, and then I was like, wait, she's not actually in the show. She was in the pilot.
Exactly.
And people forget about that. They wonder why the pilot is so iffy at first. Is like, because you got to sell it to the network. Then, you know, then comes the part where you try and make it all blend. Makes sense.
Yeah, I remember with Amazon, it was the pilot. You know, Bosch was one of the main ones that made it from a pilot to
there were so many good pilots around 2014, 2015.
Yep.
Year and
it was all voted on back then. They counted on viewership and people reviewing it or, you know, making remarks about it. And I totally forgot when I was watching the pilot episode, I totally forgotten that Conley said it wasn't going to be a case being solved every episode. It was, you know, it was going to drag out for the full season. So you see Harry Bosch in the restroom, you know, having a partial panic attack or anxiety attack, and then he was staring at himself in the mirror, and then it goes black. It's like, oh, I want more, you know. that's great. They want to rope you in with that pilot episode, but they've done that really, really well over the years. So
yeah,
getting the viewers into
it is impossible. When I did the pilot, I started around midnight because I'm a night owl, and I was like, "Yep, I'm gonna have to do three more."
Yep.
This is not a one and a done. It's not even a two episode. I'm gonna get off this season. And it is easier if you do like five episodes a night. And I know that's a grind for some people, but it's worth it. It really is.
And yeah, I remember seasons like 4, 5, and 6. I'd sit down and watch it all in one viewing. I'd even take the day off of work or something just so I could. It'd always wind up dropping it earlier around like 5, 6 o'clock my time Thursday night.
And people forget spoilers were worse at that time.
Yeah. Well, at the time I was on second shift, so I was up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning anyway, so it didn't matter, you know.
At the same hour that spoilers are coming in for other big shows like Game of Thrones, exactly. And Walking Dead, and you're just like, stop, stop, stop.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to beat all the spoilers, so I'd shut the phone off, no social media. I'm just going to sit down and cruise through this, get through it, and... You know, for season 7 and Bosch Legacy, I'm on a day shift now, so I figured I'd just tackle a few episodes here and there, you know, 3 or 4 at a time.
Lucky duck. Oh, man. Well, this is a delight having you on here, and glad you could join in the fun.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me on. It's always good to talk Bosch, especially with, I've been on a trivia break, you know, because I've posted 4 straight months of Bosch trivia, and then I was setting up for that big trivia show to give away the prizes that were sent to me from one of Henrik Bastian's assistants. So I give other people some stuff that I've gotten over the years.
Very cool.
So I was kind of gearing up eBay for that. I don't want to make any money off.
Okay.
They send it to me for free. I'm gonna give it out for free, or you know, just the cost of postage. So. And then, I did pose a question from episode 6 of Legacy when we were doing the podcast, you know, and I said I didn't want to limit it to like only US and Canada because whoever emails me the correct answer first, you know, wins a Bosch Legacy hat. And it turns out that the person that first emailed me after the podcast dropped, I was expecting an email any hour, any minute, any day. You know, so I was checking my email constantly, and after like 3 or 4 weeks, nobody had even emailed the answer. So I'm like, okay. So I posted the podcast on Bosch Pit, said, you know, hey, I still don't have a winner for, you know, the Bosch Legacy hat. Of course, the first one that emails me is from Austria. So I'm like, oh, congratulations, y'all. Send out the hat. You know.
And then yeah, I go to post office, I'm a big fan.
Yeah. It's $42 to ship it to Austria, and they said they were going to reimburse me, and they did. But then I just got the package back in the mail a few days ago. Apparently, it was an incomplete address. So I'm like, well, it's not like I'm shipping to the United States. I don't know what the addresses are like in Austria or anywhere really, other than the U.S. So. But apparently, her brother is going to be in the U.S. here in the next month and a half. So I'm going to send it to where he's going to be staying, so she can get her hat.
That is a cool connection.
So yeah. So it was kind of, you know, because I emailed her that day that when I got home that night, the box was in the mail, and I'm like, oh, great. You know, because I'd emailed her that day or that the day before saying, hey, you got a hat yet by chance? Because, you know, it's been like 3 weeks since I'd sent it out, or 4 weeks even.
Wow.
So hopefully she'll get it eventually from whenever I send it to where her family member is going to be going to here in October, November. So, but gearing up for that trivia contest show, that was really fun, you know, reaching out or, you know, community or talking with other, you know, dedicated Bosch fans like myself. It was fun to do that. A lot of work though, but so I was just taking a Bosch trivia break. So when I saw this date approaching for this podcast, I'm like, oh man, I kind of been away from that world, but obviously,
you know, it never leaves you.
It never leaves me when I've watched an episode or see each season 3 or 4 or 5 times with Legacy. I've only watched it a handful of times each, but you know, plenty of time to catch up before next year's season 2 drops. So I'm hoping they kind of do that same format where they drop 4 episodes and then 3 weeks. The next 3 weeks drop in 2 each week. You know, it was kind of fun to kind of break it apart like that, so I'm not sitting down for, you know, 10 hours watching a full season the first day. So fun to see that. Not really, well, a little bit too much, but obviously, you know, you don't really want to stay up until 2 a.m. watching a full season of the show when you got to be up for work or whatever the next day.
Fair enough.
So I'm hoping they keep that same kind of format so that way you can watch the first four episodes and kind of catch up with the characters that you've grown to love. So,
excellent. Yeah. Excellent. All righty. Well, you stay safe out there. Anything you want to plug for Everybody Counts?
Let's see here. For Bosch Pit? Let's see here. I'm hoping to do like a Zoom meeting type of thing, not with trivia, but just catching up with the fans around the world type of thing. I'm hoping to do that pretty quick. I'll be starting up Bosch Trivia in the next month or so, but that'll only be weekend trivia that I'll be posting for the foreseeable future, because doing it day to day, you know, every day for 4 months straight, it's a little bit of a grind. So I figure I'll go to weekend trivia. That's that way at least there's, you know, 8 questions a month, you know, instead of 28 to answer. So, but that's about it for Bosch Pit. And I'm hoping to plan like a stakeout Bosch, you know, Bosch watch party type of thing, where try to do like a half season on a Saturday, the other half of the season on a Sunday, and do that through Twitter, where people can do that worldwide and chime in with their favorite lines or favorite moments from each episode or each season. So I'm hoping to do something like that next February as a lead up to season 2 being dropped. So I'll try to start it in February. But with eight seasons of Bosch, you know, that's going to be a two month commitment. But the same thing with just the weekends, you know, I'll only be on the weekends only. So you don't have to really worry about, you know, or affecting work schedules or something. But, you know, for worldwide, you know, you got some time zones that are 16 hours ahead where it might be affecting their Monday shifts or schedules. But yeah, so other than that, kind of just playing it by ear, throwing out a few things. You know, we got the Conley's new novel coming out in just over a month, and can't wait to read and or listen to it, because Titus Welliver is going to be doing the audiobook again for the Bosch part.
That's a cool crossover. I like it when people kind of cross the medium. Like there was like when COVID first hit, there was a cool Longmire get together, and the author of the books and Lou Diamond Phillips, you know, we've been in the adaptation of the show. We're bringing fans together. I love it when they blend worlds.
Since Titus got the role, he was doing the audiobooks for Conley's ever since he came on for the role. And they even did like a special edition for the Black Echo, the first novel of Conley's, where Titus read it. And then they had like an interview at the end of it, you know, with him and Conley talking with somebody. And it was kind of fun to kind of get into their minds a little bit, or, you know, hear some of the questions that were answered.
Oh, very cool.
So yeah, trying to do a few Q&As every now and then here and there, and, you know, do a kind of trivia coming back here in the next month or so. And I was thinking about starting to back up next weekend when I'm in LA, but I'm like, no, when I'm in LA, I'm just going to enjoy LA, being there with the kids, and not have to worry about trivia questions being posted. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to this fall and seeing obviously more behind the scenes photos from set from season 2 of Legacy.
Very sweet.
And whatever tidbits we can get from cast or crew members. So in fact, just a really quick thing to wrap up here was a few weeks ago, Titus had posted a picture from behind the scenes on Twitter. I'm like, oh, okay. So he posted it, so it's good to share on Bosch Pit and retweet or something like that. All of a sudden, about a half hour, 45 minutes later, Ahsoka Vasquez is reaching out to me saying, hey, by chance, can you take that picture off Bosch Pit? Titus kind of jumped the gun and shared it without the production team's consent. So they didn't really want spoilers for the cameo for who was in that picture. So if you were one of the lucky few that caught the picture, you'll know who the cast member is that joins in on that scene. But so when I saw it on Twitter from a couple other people, I kind of reached out like Ahsoka did to me, you know, hey, by chance, can you take that down? The production team didn't really want that leaked or shown. So Titus kind of jumped the gun there and sharing it. So I was kind of helping out, try to make sure that everybody that I saw or that, you know, follow the show as closely as I do, to hopefully take them down, you know, because obviously people take screen grabs or screenshots from the posts on Instagram or Twitter. So at least I'm connected enough where people will, you know, reach out and say, hey, you know, any chance you can delete that for me? Yep, no problem. Because I'm in the same boat. If you guys don't want something leaked, I don't want to leak it. So it's all good. Now.
For now.
But for now, yes. So all is quiet on this front for now. So, but I appreciate you having me on tonight. It's always good to talk.
Absolutely. Bosch. Long Legacy. Overdue.
Way overdue. But hey, any time's a good time for a Bosch talk. So.
We'll try and do a Lincoln Lawyer chat soon as well. Yep.
Sounds good to me. That'll give me time to refresh my brain. I've watched it a handful of times each episode, so it's fun to kind of get into
look
that
at you,
world.
Man, look at you. Look at you go.
Well, I just throw it on in the background more or less, and if I catch something, it's also for trivia too. I've been trying to get some trivia going for that show as well. And I might be able to get a set visit for the Lincoln Lawyer. It's not filming yet. They're not going to be starting filming until early November. But Tracy reached out to me, to Ten Humphrey, and asked if I could get like a set visit. So I might be able to see the sets from the show, but not be able to meet too many people. So, or okay, at least after.
One at a time.
So, yeah, one at a time. And like I said, this year around, going with my older two kids, so I can kind of show them, you know, the sights from the show and spots to eat and stuff like that. It's going to be fun for...
At this point, though, if I was a streaming platform programmer, I would want as many spoilers as I could just to get people to watch something.
Yeah, true.
It seems like something.
Say they like to keep things close to the vest and... some cases. So it was good to see that. I don't know if you follow Titus on Twitter or Instagram,
I see him once in a while.
Anything, but yeah. His daughter is going to be reprising her role of Sam the dog walker in season 2. So
oh wow, I didn't know that was his real life daughter.
Yeah, that she actually made an appearance in season 2, episode 10. She's the girl that comes up to Maddie to ask her to push her on the swings because her dad's busy, and they show a guy on the phone talking. That's Titus's real life daughter.
I was too distracted by Bosch's dog from season 3 and on.
No, of course. So Sam the dog walker is actually portrayed by Cora Welliver, who's Titus's real life daughter, and she's going to be back in season 2 as well for walking Coltrane. So I'm hoping we get some more Coltrane scenes, you know.
I'm sure.
We'll see, hopefully.
Future's still looking bright.
Having me on again, it was fun talking.
And absolutely. Any other topic you want to chat, let's have you.
Sounds good. I'm not really versed in a lot of stuff like Bosch, but if you get a panel, I can kind of keep up a little bit. So
okay, yeah. Just name any other movies or shows or books even that is like, yeah, I could talk for hours about those and I'll see what I can do.
Sounds good. We'll keep in touch then.
Okay. And be safe out there. I know it's still a little chaotic and politically divided country, but I think the future's still looking bright. I hope so. I think everyone's calming down a bit and just realizing, hey, you know, you gotta live and you gotta be respectable. Let's all have fun together.
Everybody counts or nobody counts.
Everybody counts.
And hold fast. Stay safe and hold fast. So
right.
But I appreciate this. I really do. Thank you very much.
Likewise. Peace and love.
Take care, buddy.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up Review Show.